Good morning, everyone. Today is the 15th of November, 2019. It's very hot outside. This is Singapore. We are in the ThoughtWorks headquarters. The room is probably 4 or 5 meters by 4 or 5 meters. I'm here with Sunil Mundra. The idea today is, I'm gonna do an introduction in a few minutes, but the idea is to have a little recording and try to help the community. This idea came a few weeks ago. There is nothing prepared. We have a few questions. We're gonna be talking about agility, about enterprise agility. We're gonna be going through different topics, and this is just an experiment, right? We also got some questions from some consultants, and we hope you enjoy it, right? And something important is that perhaps we are gonna agree with some of the questions, perhaps we're gonna give you different ideas, but we try to share here our honest perspectives. So my left-hand side, I have the Sunil Mundra book, which is Enterprise Agility, Being Agile in a Changing World. Many of you, I know you know it. In the right-hand side, I have mine, Leading Exponential Change. And at the time we wrote these books, I think not many people were talking about enterprise agility. Yeah. And I have the feeling that now many people started talking about enterprise agility. And I was wondering sometimes, and you know, some people ask me how you came up with the idea. How did you come up with the Mundra, with the idea of writing the book?
Okay. So hi, Eric. It's a great to have a conversation with you. Thanks for visiting, you know, ThoughtWorks office here in Singapore. This is the office which is, you know, the regional office for Asia Pacific region. And it's finally really good to meet you in person. We have interacted a lot over LinkedIn and other media.
And we have been trying to do it for a long time,
yes,
right?
But we finally meet today, so that's wonderful, right? So enterprise agility, I think, you know, I've been doing consulting, coaching, whatever you want to call it, for about 9 years or so, ever since I joined ThoughtWorks. And what I realized is that organizations are complex systems. Which means that you have to take a systemic view of things. So that's when I began to look at how organizations can be treated as complex adaptive systems. And what I felt is that while Agile is mainstream and it's not pretty well established in terms of delivery work at the team level, there wasn't much thought around how to make it work at an enterprise level. So for me, and I did some research to see if there was any existing material there, there wasn't much. So I felt that this is an area where I have a perspective, and I felt that it would be good to share, you know, with the community. And that's the primary reason for me to write the book, is to share my perspective that organizations are living complex adaptive systems and should be treated as such.
Yeah, that's very good. I think at the time of writing our books, there were no books. So probably there are the first two books about enterprise agility. And I know there are more and more people now involved into change in companies. And sometimes people ask me, you know, what's the difference between an agile consultant? Are you an agile consultant? Are you an agile coach? How do you define yourself?
Okay, I think for a long time I used these words as synonyms. I mean, let me admit that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think after seeing what industry is doing and even my role, how it has evolved, and this is my definition, you know, I'm not sure if it's right or wrong, but I think a consultant is more in an advisory space. The consultant gives you advice and then it's really up to you how you want to execute it. Whereas to me, a coach will not only give you advice, but will handhold you through executing it. I think that's the primary difference between I see a consultant and a coach, but I often see that these two words are often used interchangeably. But in my mind, you know, that's the definition. In my role, I do both. Sometimes I'm just asked to advise and I do that. But sometimes I actually handhold, you know, leaders and programs and, you know, even sometimes teams to execute the plan for change.
And I think it's true what you say is sometimes, you know, you change your hat and you move from one kind of definition to the other. Sometimes you ask questions, open questions. Sometimes you focus more on giving solutions. And what do you think is we need the agile consultant in an organization now?
Well, I think organizations need to know what good looks like. Okay, and I think that's where the value of a coach and consultant comes. It's about knowing whether you know what good looks like and can you take that organization on that path, right? Because if you don't know what you don't know, what kind of journey are you going to take? I think that is where people having expertise, either as coaches or consultants, can come in. Show what good looks like, adapt that to suit, you know, what is the change appetite for the organization, and take the organization, you know, down that path of change.
And I think it's important also that in certain way, the consultant help the organization for people to perceive that, you know, change is accelerating at the moment.
Yes.
And also how we make people feel comfortable with constant changes, it is not something natural, right?
Absolutely. Right. I think change is difficult. And I think that's where, you know, the reassurance from a coach, understanding the fears, concerns and addressing them. Reassuring in terms of where he or she has done it before and saying that this has worked there. You know, I know that this in our context is the right thing to do and going on that path. But having said that, let me also say this. Every intervention in a complex system is a hypothesis. Okay?
Yeah, that's just true.
So while a consultant, you know, knows patterns, but every organization is unique, and I often give examples relating organizations to human bodies. So while each of our bodies are unique, right, there are some patterns which doctors will rely on. Okay, that, yeah, if you have a fever, paracetamol might work, but in some cases it might not. So there is no 100% guarantee of an outcome, and that is why I say that in a complex system, every intervention is a hypothesis. And this is where, like a doctor, you know, the coaches or the consultant expertise has to come in and say, oh, we made this intervention, it's working, it's not working for whatever reason, you know, can we adapt, can we change, can we try something new? And to me, that level of experience, which, you know, you have credibility for as a doctor, is what you need when you're dealing with a complex system.
That sometimes it doesn't happen in that way, right?
Well, I can't comment on that, but I try to do my best in terms of, you know, being an advisor to say, I look at the total health of the organization. Yes, there could be some parts which are paining, just like, okay, you have an overall health, but sometimes your leg is paining, so you first need to treat the leg before you treat the whole body, right? So you need to look at those kind of situations and say, where do you need to start? What are your goals? What are the systemic constraints you have? And how do you deal with that, right? So it's all about learning by doing. It's all about making small interventions and testing the appetite of the organization to make those changes and improve agility.
And I think that for several years, we got used to that. For a problem, there were just a few solutions. And now what we are looking for is for people who can reframe problems, right?
Yes.
And then this is what I call it mental agility. If people are not able to think in different ways, and this is connected, I talk in the book about, you know, neuroplasticity. If you are unable to reframe problems and see the problem from different perspectives, then it's very difficult to just build an organization. And then after you get it, the organization learns how you retain that learning, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, that the key is, you know, look at the problem, really look at, don't go by the symptom, try and understand what the real underlying problem is and what is the outcome that you want to achieve. Yeah. I think you brought out a point about, you know, people expecting, you know, best practices, good practices. I have been very much influenced by Dave Snowden's Canavan framework. And I must confess that I used to use the word complicated and complex as synonyms, but there's a big difference. And I today see that most organizations are expecting to be treated the organization change or agile transformation as a complicated problem, when it is actually a complex problem. Of course, in the overall transformation, you will have all situations. You will have simple and obvious situations that you do this, you know, you get the effect. Then there are things which you need to do where the expert needs to come in and do that for you, right? That's a complicated situation. But there are other areas which are very, very complex. And you need to understand what is complex, what is complicated, and what is simple, and adapt your approach and your advice to that specific situation?
And I have the feeling that sometimes companies are very focused on creating their own internal frameworks that they do not have time to ask, what's the problem I'm trying to solve, right?
Yes. And again, that is coming from a good practice that, yes, if this pattern has worked somewhere, then it should work for me. People copying frameworks is just blindly copying them. I'm sure you can use them as starting points, but you know, blindly copying them is something which will never work for you. Because every organization is so different that, and every organization, the capabilities, the amount of variables which are there, right? The structural constraints, the governance mechanisms, the mindset of the leadership, the type of customers you're addressing, there's loads of variables. So it is really, I would say, for a lack of better word, I can say that it is very short-sighted. And I would say it's an unrealistic expectation that a blindly copied framework will, you know, work in your context. You have to adapt it. And that is where, you know, somebody with experience in terms of understanding what that intervention is, can we try something, can we adapt and inspect and adapt? That's what's needed.
And yeah, I've seen many, many companies just thinking that their objective is just creating a framework to solve a complicated problem, right? Instead of seeing the organization. And then when you scale this kind of framework, then you realize that you are not solving the problem, but making it more complex, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, again, one of the reasons why people tend to use frameworks, this is my hypothesis again, is that people want to scale quickly. I mean, nobody wants to wait. A true transformation for a large organization, 5,000, 10,000 people, in my view, right? A real transformation of the company struggling and, you know, have legacy systems and all of that, and you really want to move to a high agility organization, it can take anywhere between 3 to 5 years. Okay, and today nobody has that patience. Everybody's looking to complete that within a year, year and a half, so that, you know, they can announce that our transformation is successful. I get my promotion and my bonus, and I'm done, right? And that is why you will see multiple organizations going through waves of transformation, because the transformation was declared prematurely successful. The systemic issues are not addressed, which overpowered all the green shoots once you left it midway. Right. And then you have to start all over again. And that's created a lot of change fatigue in many organizations.
And also you are seeing at the moment many organizations scaling agile coaches in the same way as they scale anything else. So they believe that, for example, if they have 10 agile coaches and then now they have 50, they're going to go faster.
Yeah, I mean, you need a minimum number of, you know, I would say external agents to come in and help you. But I think the real sustainability happens when you create internal champions from day one, identify them, groom them, and they take the mantle as quickly as they can go it, right? So the way I approach, you know, coaching is like you're trying to teach a child to ride a bike, okay? You never ride it yourself. The child has to do it, all right? But you're with the child, you're holding the bicycle till the child becomes comfortable. Right? And once you see that the child has achieved balance, you move away, but you don't walk off. You're still there if the child is wanting to hold it.
Yes.
Right? And once the child has really got the balance and, you know, is on his or her own, then you say, all right, I'm done.
And now that you say that, I was wondering, how do you, because people need to change, right? People need to grow. How do you enhance the capacity for people to get used to change? Right? Do you use any specific technique or?
Yeah, I think the key thing is, you know, if you look at change, I mean, most people say there is a resistance to change. You know, I think there are a lot of reasons for that. One is fear of unknown.
Yes, true.
Second is there are some who are afraid that their incompetence will get exposed, because when you adopt agile ways of working, there is no place to hide. So they fear that. The other is a natural cycle of adoption. So you have this adoption cycle where you have the innovators, the early adopters, the early majority, late majority, and laggards. You should expect that. Yeah. So then you cannot put everybody in the same bucket. And for the late majority and laggards, use their skepticism to be grounded, to address some of the questions which, you know, you might have got carried away with, right? So I think the way to handle change is, what's in it for me? I think if you can answer that question for an individual, and if that individual perceives the what's in it for me as something favorable, they will be willing to change. But it's easier said than done. It involves a lot of conversations, right messaging from the leaders, leader acting as role models. I mean, we have seen situations where leaders are asking people to change, but they continue with their old behaviors. Why will somebody change? So there's a lot of, you know, variables that need to happen, you know, for change to be facilitated. I never say manage change, and even in my book, I'm calling my chapter facilitating change. You can only facilitate it. Again, you can make some interventions and see how that works. And then, you know, the change starts happening and then the culture starts getting influenced.
And I think that you mentioned that about fear. What I see is people have a lot of fear, and this is something I talk in the book, about losing prestige. Sometimes we are creating new positions in the company, or we are moving managers to be servant leaders, but this is seen as a new role with less prestige. And prestige, unfortunately, produces a lot of resistance.
Yes, it does. Yes,
and activate the amygdala, and then people start having fears of losing their subconscious or losing their position, right?
Exactly. That's what it comes back to, what's in it for me. And if the what's in it for me is not perceived as favorable, why would I want to change?
And today we were talking about consultants or coaches, or the way we want to, you know, people helping the company. And do you think there is any specific principle that a consultant should follow, a group of principles or values that a consultant should follow at the time of helping a company?
I think you really need to understand why you are being engaged. What is the outcome that the company wants, and is the company really wanting to change? Yeah. So the understanding the drivers for change, understanding the pain points is for me the basic starting point. And the other point is about aligning the senior leadership, the objectives and the need for change, because if there is misalignment, everything else is going to fall apart. So for me, winning the trust of leadership, really understanding their pain points, really giving the confidence that this is the way to do it. And moreover, empathy, for the situation that they're in, and how do you suggest change while still being empathetic, to the challenges which they have. To me, those are the key things that a coach or a consultant must do at the beginning.
Something I generally see is that consultants many times assume that companies know how to engage with them, right? And for me, this is wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, as I said, right, many companies don't know what they don't know. And they don't know what good looks like. So they call you as an expert and they expect you to, advise. But on the other hand, there are other companies also which will take that advice blindly and implement it without understanding the why.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think when you advise on a change, or when you advise on any intervention, the why is critical. And that is the only way that the organization, can sustain agility, by creating those champions and that mindset within the company. So when you know the why, you can always find the how and do it differently. And that's still not a problem as long as you're moving towards the why. But we have organizations which are saying we are doing agile transformations because we are doing retrospectives, or we are doing stand-ups, we have a card wall, we are writing stories. But, often we see that they are doing their best, right? But they have not been educated on how to link it to values and purpose, because agile and agility is about values and purpose and principles. So if you are able to link what you do to the values and the principles, to me, that really is the key to sustaining agility.
And I think that it's very important that those values are visible and are shared, right?
They are visible, they are shared, and they are followed by people who are looked up to, especially the leaders. So it's not just about sharing them. You have to behave
in a certain way, right?
So you have to change yourself. So I think many people ask me, where do we start a transformation? It's at both places. My typical way of doing it is the mindset change and the behavior change is what I worked on, usually at the leadership level, creating self-awareness about where they are, understanding their strengths, weaknesses, their blind spots, and trying to sort of move that mindset. But on the ground, because you want to create a quick success story as well, you have to start to do agile or adopt agile practices and processes. So this is where, I take a top-down approach from a leadership perspective as well as a bottom-up approach from executing it at the team level and at the delivery level.
And something that happened to me, and I wanted to share with you this, is that sometimes companies expect this consultant to jump right in and, start training and persuading to adopt agility or even a framework. Do you have any specific recommendation? Do you think that can we do something in those cases?
I'll give you again an example of a doctor. All right. So when you say I have a pain or I have a headache, right? And if something doesn't appear to be right, or you know the symptoms are so, what the doctor orders, he or she will order some tests. Yeah, he or she will check you physically. So it's like saying I have a headache, doctor, give me the medicine, and then the doctor, without doing anything, can give you the medicine and it will work. Can the doctor ever do that? No, right? So I think this is what the coach and consultant needs to do, is do a bit of discovery to understand what that context is, where it is hurting, what is the problem, what is the symptom. Sometimes companies tell you symptoms, but the problem is something else. Okay, many people say, oh, we have a quality issue. Quality is only a symptom, bad quality. Yeah, there could be many reasons why quality is poor. You need to understand that. So I think spending enough time on doing discovering the context, understanding what's working well, because we want to amplify that.
Yeah, this
that.
Is very important, right? Yeah. That sometimes the consultant do not no. take the time, right?
Look, I think if the company is in business, and especially if it's an established organization, they are doing something right. Let us accept that. Okay? And what we want to do is leverage that, but at the same time, see which are the blockers to enhancing agility. Where is it hurting? And then prepare a roadmap of change, and then have a transformation vision based on your context. This is again what I talk in my book, is this approach of doing a discovery, then doing a visioning, creating a roadmap for change, and then executing it. So,
and I think that we see many consultants sometimes focused on removing blockages, but sometimes they forget that there is something somewhere in the company that is working well. And perhaps, as you say, we can leverage that try to improve it, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, it could be related to people capabilities. It could be related to your processes, your product, your customer focus, anything, right? And again, you know, improvement is a journey. Yeah. But you need to see whether, you know, something is a blocker to transformation or something is an enabler. And if the enabler is in good shape, then you want to enhance it.
And something I also believe that, as we mentioned, sometimes, you know, companies do not understand the kind of rights and obligations of the role, right? The consultant. And sometimes they believe that the consultant is a manager and tells people how to do things, right?
Yeah, I think that's where, you know, it's very easy to, you know, put responsibilities on the consultant. But the point is, what is the level of influence a consultant has? Or a coach has. So there is some level of influence. Of course, there has to be accountability in terms of what outcomes, you know, we are achieving. But again, to expect that a consultant or a coach will have a silver bullet to solve all your problems is unrealistic. Again, giving you a doctor's example. Okay, you are very sick and you go to the doctor, and it's probably the best doctor that's available in the city, and the body doesn't respond and the patient passes away. Do you blame the doctor for that? No, right? The doctor has done his or her best, you know, given the, but you have to respect the constraints of the system. Yeah? So, the similar approach has to be taken towards a coach or a consultant, that they can help you, they can show you the path, but you have to walk it. And if there are constraints in walking that path, we have to recognize, we have to see whether those constraints can be removed. And if those constraints can't be removed, and the consultant has called out those constraints, you can't blame the consultant or the coach for not getting your results that you wanted.
Well, but sometimes we see that this transfer of, you know, just blame someone. And also, I've seen cases where the consultant, as I always say, don't do it. The consultant just try to take the lead of the whole transformation, and there is no leadership. So you see sometimes what they call center of excellence trying to run the transformation. And that's the problem. The problem in there is that there is no leadership, right?
Yeah, I think it just cannot be a program which has to just execute. I think the leadership and the change program has to go hand in hand. A senior leader, as we call in ThoughtWorks, a courageous executive, you know, needs to be closely connected to the transformation. And if there are any blockers, impediments, etc., that person needs to be able to work with the other people in the organization to resolve them.
And also, it's important to see the flow, right? If you have a blockage, it has to be visible, and you have to know who is solving that.
Exactly.
And if the person can't solve it, we move it somewhere else. Yeah. perhaps up in the hierarchy, but someone has to be able to solve it at some point, right?
Exactly, exactly. Or if it's an unsolvable problem, then you accept the limitation of that constraint and then you move. For example, something could be compliance related or legal related. Yeah. And there's no way you can bypass that process, for example. Then you accept that as a constraint and tone down your outcome expectations appropriately. That's something that you cannot change.
Yeah, which are adjusting expectations, I think, is part of the role, right? And that sounds like sometimes we need to teach the organization how to experiment, how to learn more, right?
Yes. I think, again, most people are expecting prescriptions. And that's how we are taught in schools, mostly, or at least I was, here's a question and this is the model answer. But I think learning by doing is really the key to making situations of complex nature to move ahead on the path of change.
Many people ask me, what's the difference between agile and enterprise agility?
So I think one of the key things which I was quite frustrated about was people use agile and agility in similar terms or with similar reference, and that's why you will see that in my book I have devoted one full chapter to explain the difference between agile and agility. All right, agile to me, if I were to broadly put it, it's about agile processes and practices at the delivery team level and the program level. Yeah, but agility is a set of capabilities at the enterprise level. So for me, I talk about a model in my book which talks about a few capabilities, but for me there are three basic capabilities of agility: the ability to sense, the ability to adapt, and ability to respond. And an organization can have more. For example, Apple is known for its innovations. They can have innovativeness as an additional capability. So for me, agility is a set of capabilities which you need at an enterprise level. But agile is more about executing towards delivery. It's more about processes and practices, not just in delivery. I mean, you could do a stand-up or a retrospective for any type of work, not just related to IT. But to me, that's the key difference.
And I think it's always executing with purpose. So that is sometimes companies forget, right? And I think people can have any definition they want about enterprise agility, yeah, as long as it helps the company evolve and find their ways in a sustainable way, right? In my book, for example, my definition is that the capacity for the company to adapt to the new market conditions,
exactly,
to create a competitive advantage. But it's very important that it's not going to impact on the organizational health. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, something which is not sustainable, yeah, it's not going to go anywhere. Absolutely. And in my book, I talk about five different levels of agility, which is technical agility that we know already, structural agility, which is the possibility of changing processes, outcomes agility, which is the ability to change the strategy, yeah, right? Social agility, which is how we connect. If people do not connect better than this speed of change, yeah, people are not going to be able to adapt. But correct, for me, the most important is the mental agility.
Yes. Yes.
If people are not able to reframe, yeah, problems, to see the problems in different ways, yeah, to change,
yeah,
then that's going to be hard, right?
Exactly. And that's where I've devoted a chapter on leadership, where I've called out the leadership traits and the behaviors. There is an element of mental agility, which I emphasize upon there. The mindset, as you mentioned, is really the key among all the top, any which way you slice agility. I mean, Business Agility Institute slices it in a different way. I have sliced an organization in a different way. So it's really about looking at it from multiple angles, and there's no right or wrong answer there. But the net thing to note is that, yes, it's all about a mindset change. And that really has to happen across the organization, where there is less fear of failure. There is reason for everyone to collaborate and connect. That's a property of a complex system. That value gets produced when the agents interact with each other, right? There is value in focusing on outcomes together as a team. So the focus moves away from, just completing an activity and saying, I'm done with my job, to actually making sure that you deliver the outcome. So all these things, become important, and these cannot be achieved unless you have mental agility or the right mindset.
Sure, sure. And that is important. As I mentioned, we got some questions from some people, different parts of the world, and Amilcar Rosales, an enterprise architect from Ecuador, asked how we can manage and mitigate risk when we support change to try to increase enterprise agility, right?
Yeah. So I think the risk is you have to, so risk was always a bad word. Right, and especially for you know some very old school executives, risk was always to be mitigated. But as I said, in a complex system, every intervention is a hypothesis, which means that you're taking some level of risk. The only point is to see, try something, test, learn, and then amplify. So for me, I think risk is something to be leveraged, because without risk, you will never have experimentation. And experimentation and innovation is very important if you have to continuously evolve and continuously adapt to the environment, right? So you have to have the guardrails in place to ensure that, you know, somebody doesn't pull the whole organization down or in a big way. For example, Barings Bank, Nick Leeson, you know what that one person did, right? You can't allow that to happen, obviously. But you need the right guardrails in place, but you have to give room. I believe that if you look at the Kahneman framework, there is that fine line between simple and chaos, or order and chaos. Evidence has proven that organizations which balance that, right? So order is just following the rule book. You don't do anything different, just follow the procedure. And chaos is absolutely not acceptable. But chaos does not mean anarchy.
Yeah, sure, right. Which is confusion, right?
So that's why people are afraid of the word chaos, because they think it's anarchy. No, but chaos means that you learn to leverage your risk. You have a bit of freedom. You have the freedom to fail and fail fast, right? And learn and recover from it. And how do you come back to this balance between order and chaos is really the key for an organization to become innovative. And that's really how you manage risk, by putting appropriate guardrails and making sure people understand, the consequences of something. You share patterns that have worked in your organization or which have not worked. You educate people in terms of what the limits are. And I think, you know, you trust people. People will manage those risks appropriately. For example, if I can just take a minute more. Again, in my book, I did some research, and while I was writing it, it's found that many of the big disasters which have happened in the world, oil spills, airplane crashes, people on the ground knew something is wrong.
Yes, true.
Right? But they're just afraid to report it, or, you know, they don't want to try something new to mitigate that because it's a question of fear of failure, right? So, as much as risk management you have, why does the oil spill, spill happen? Why does an airplane crash, right? Most of these reasons are because there is a symptom there which you, have, because you have not encouraged the culture to bring that out. And people see that again as something which they will get blamed for. So I think the point is that, but if you allow the people the freedom to say, you have a problem, go fix it, right? And tell me, and of course you can consult somebody else for what it is, but the empowerment is the key. And when you empower people, I think, you know, these kind of disasters, you know, definitely can be avoided. Or if not, you will at least get the warning signals much earlier.
And I think it is some confusion we generally see, that for me, an agile organization is not designed to prevent failure. It's to just to identify what produced that failure, right?
Exactly. And identify it early enough.
Yeah. So we have to, you know, detect that failure early to collectively.
Exactly.
Share it and then try something else.
Correct. But the key part is, as I said, with the example of the major disasters, people have to be comfortable communicating that failure back to you.
Okay, so what's the first behavior?
So, one second, just to conclude on the risk. The approach is, I think there are organizations which have done a big bank transformation. I was just reading an article on LinkedIn today about BankWest CEO stating that you can't do it piecemeal, you just have to go all out. Now, that's the risk they took. I think ING also took the same risk. So many of the big banks, are taking
and
that
risk. We'll see what happens there, right? Yes.
Yeah. But it may work, and it has worked for some organizations as well. For me, it's about learning and doing. So my default preference, and I'm not saying that I'm only stuck to it, is to start small, create a thin slice, show a bit of success, and then scale based on the learnings that you have from making that intervention. So,
which is kind of the first behavior we try to see, right? In a, when you see that, you know that something is
exactly.
is working well,
exactly.
right?
And that's where you do a thin slice. You're not risking the whole organization, right? So,
Yeah, that some organizations have tried, and we know how it ends up, right?
Yeah, it's but some totally have succeeded as well, Eric. So I cannot comment that a big bank will not work. For some, it works. But my default instinct is not to go in that direction. No, no. Because I think I come from a finance background myself before I came into IT. And my first reaction is, you know, what is the biggest risk? And, you know, can I afford to take that risk? So that's my natural instinct in terms of, you know, looking at something going big bang is something which I'm...
I think it's something we learned, right?
Right, so, yeah.
So I have another question from a coach, agile coach in Peru, Agustin Varela. He said that in your book, you talk about that you believe in agile evolution, not in agile transformations, which I think is related to what we have been talking about. And for you, as he says, transformation implies going from point A to B. And then if you don't agree or we do not agree, why are so many companies sell agile transformations in the market?
I think the word transformation is a loosely used word. It's a buzzword. Today, there is no organization which is denying that they are not doing transformation. Everybody is saying, we are doing some transformation. Okay, but I think what people don't understand is that, again, it's the way to approach a complicated problem. I want to transform this room here. All right, I get an expert, I get a carpenter, I get, you know, whoever is needed, an electrician. And I know what the end state is exactly going to look like. Yeah,
sure.
And I change this room and the end state matches, you know, my expectations. And I say this room is now transformed. The problem is this: when you have an end state in mind, yeah, A, you don't know how the organization is going to react because it is not complicated. It is complex. Yeah. Second, the environment is changing so fast that whatever goalpost you have set up, you know, might be soon outdated or irrelevant, you know, when you're moving towards that. That is why, given the fast pace of change which is happening in the environment, you always have to sense what's happening in the environment and adapt and evolve. Again, as part of the complex organizations or complex, anything which is complex, the only way a complex system will survive is if it evolves.
Yeah, and that's true, right?
So look at us humans. I mean, one theory says that we were apes earlier. We had tails, yeah? But the tail was useless to us, so we gave it up. And we are still evolving. Yeah. Look at economies. Where were we? Barter. Okay. Then we had cash money. Then we had credit cards. And now who knows where we are going to? Crypto money or what that is. Right. So you look at any complex system, it has to evolve. And when you say evolution, transformation is just being point A to point B. It's a complicated problem. You cannot have a transformation approach, which means that you already know the end state. You know, in a situation where, you know, the environment is changing so fast.
Yeah, and this, in my case, I think that I do not discriminate anywhere. I think it's just about alignment, right? Because if we are talking about continuous transformation or not, so I think perhaps it's also an opportunity for companies to understand.
That's why I use the word evolution rather than transformation.
Okay, and I have a question from Stefan Sonjen, which is also related. And it says, if in agile or enterprise agility, we have a greater need for people who act as leaders, and we need more leaders, and less so traditional managers, right? What is a good approach to coaching middle management? And it looks to be plenty of people are having problems with, and then they become some kind of leaders.
No, that's a great point you brought up. I think if I can see, you know, if there is a biggest drag on transformation, you know, it's the middle managers. If you don't change the way they work, right, they can derail our transformation. I mean, many times we see that the senior execs are aligned, they want to do it. The teams are ready for the change on the ground, but it is the middle manager who will derail the whole plan. I think the point is, if you really understand why the middle manager came, you have to go to Tayloristic theory where the thinker and the doer was separate. You can't do that anymore. What are middle managers doing today? And I feel for them. I really do. Most of the time, they are passing information up and down, right? So how close are they to the ground? How much time are they spending in mentoring teams and people? Yeah. Where is their role as a servant leader? Okay. So I think unless that changes, you know, middle management will be insecure, will be fearful, will be afraid that, you know, they will get exposed that they are not doing anything. For example, some people have asked me, oh, the team is empowered, what am I going to do? Of course, there's lots to do. Yeah, you can be with the team, you can go to the customer, you can mentor the
But they feel that empowered, and this is something that generally happens when you lose prestige or power, or you have that feeling. Perhaps it's not true, right?
Yes, exactly. And how does the empowerment come? Somebody sitting in a closed door cabin inside, and the size of the cabin shows how much power you have. I think these are the wrong things. What we need to do is start measuring, changing the success criteria by which we measure our managers. Yeah, not about they submit a report on time. Right? Report, nobody should be touching the report. It should all be in the radiators and people should be able to derive the information that they need. Why somebody has to create report? That's why we have so many watermelon reports, because nobody wants to report bad news. There's so much of that going on right now. So I think, we have to use that talent, that brain power of our people who are there at the middle level, on the ground, meet customers, meet the teams, remove their impediment. And of course, for doing that, they need to be empowered by the senior leadership as well. Right? Many times they are not. They're just passing information up and down, which is very sad, because they are at the middle management level because they have done something well, right? There's some capability there.
But sometimes they have also to assume that they are also part of the problem and part of the solution.
Yes.
As otherwise they ask, as we see in a lot of places, that they ask people to change. But I always ask those guys, okay, but what are you doing to change?
Exactly. I think, again, it comes back to the same question of what's in it for me?
Sure.
If I'm going to lose prestige, if I'm going to lose power, if I'm going to lose my air-conditioned, large cabin, and I have to go and sit with the team, if that's more important to me, then I'm going to be reluctant to change. And I think the point is, yes, you have to convince, cajole these people that the new thing is going to be better for you. Right, you will find more fulfillment. But the point is that you need to, leverage the adoption curve, look at the innovators and the early adopters, make them champions, groom them, and then start pairing the laggards
Move
with
in
them.
The, sure.
Laggards with them. Because, if you pair that person with someone in the same context, they will get more confidence.
Great, excellent. And we're going to go for the last question, again from Stefan Sonchen. And I think this, you're going to enjoy this question, is what's a good approach to making agile ways of budgeting stick in a company that transitioned from traditional ways of founding project?
Right. So we all know the problems of traditional ways of founding project, right? Suppose you want to, have a budgeting cycle from January to December. You start preparing your business case from June. There's lots of paperwork that you need to go through, and money is allocated, and then, there is no governance around it. I think if I were to answer this question in short, and I talk a little bit about this in my book in terms of governance, is to treat the release of money like a startup, like to a startup by a PE investor. So how does a startup get money? You get first round of funding, you show value, only then you get the next round. You show value, only then you get the third round. If you don't show value, the funding stops. So my suggestion in short is, yes, you can still have an annual budgeting cycle, but it has to have two things. One is, are you validating whether the value is coming or not and tying your funding to incremental delivery of value? Second, do you have enough flexibility that if any opportunity comes in midway, you are able to quickly capitalize on that by investing money and not wait till next January and for somebody 6 months spending to create a business case by which that opportunity may be gone?
And also, I think it's related to visibility, right? You have to make all these problems visible.
Absolutely. And you have to try sometimes a small thing, see if that works, it doesn't work. Again, it's about validation of value. And releasing funding based on that. So again, I'm not against annual budgeting. I think that's something which people are talking about beyond budgeting, etc. I don't have enough expertise to comment on that. If people are doing it, it's great. But I think a pragmatic approach is, yes, you budget annually, but you release your funds based on validation of value and you keep enough room for funding new opportunities.
Sure. And I generally also recommend that at least they are clear about the values of what they are trying to achieve, right?
Yeah.
If we are trying to adapt to the market condition, then is budget supporting it?
Exactly. And I think today is a matter of opportunities. Opportunities come and go. You have to be, grabbing that opportunity as soon as it comes along. Yeah. If you wait for 6 months, it's gone.
Okay. So I wanted just to finish. Thank you for your time, Sunil.
Thank you very much, Eric, for giving me this opportunity to share my views. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Your questions are very thought-provoking. And I sincerely hope people will find what I've said, useful in some form, or at least trigger some thoughts in their mind. I think, that's really the objective. And I have just shared, what I have seen work. And
I hope it helps the community, right?
That's the whole goal.
And I wanted to finish with a quote from Steve Goodyear, a writer, which said, "It is a mistake to think that moving fast is the same as actually going somewhere."
Exactly, exactly. So it's about you know, the right direction. It's like a boat race. Yeah, you go in the right direction, you row it together, and of course you go fast. So all those three things need to come together, even when an organization is taken on the path of enterprise agility.
Thank you, Sunil. Have a good day.
Thank you very much, Eric.